Good to see everybody here this morning. Hope you've had a good week. Good to have Becky back in town with us after her stay down in San Antonio for a while. And each of the rest of y'all, we have several that are visiting and several that have been away for a while. And good to have each one of you. And good to have everybody that's always here and always encouraging. We appreciate that. If you missed class this morning, you missed a good class. Justin taught on it and talked about sin, and also talked about several times, had several references to work, and we're going to talk about working today. One of the things I was kind of interested in Clay's comments with the squash, because, you know, talking about there'll come a point where people will stick it on your porch if you're not careful. I know I've told some of y'all this before, but in Wyoming, the only thing that really grew was zucchini. And it grew really good. As a matter of fact, I think you could show the ground a picture of a zucchini, and the next day you could probably come out and have a whole harvest of it. But we had kind of a joke at church, you know, that everybody would lock their doors, not so that to keep anybody from stealing anything, but to keep them from putting a bag of zucchini in their back seat while they were in worship. And so it was just zucchinis were everywhere. There was a guy that owned a store called Wings and Things, and he had a reader board that he always had some saying on it, and one of my favorite sayings that he ever put up was, "He who buys his own zucchini has no friends." And so that was Wyoming. The only redeeming thing that we ever had with zucchini, other than the fact that it tastes really good fried, was Carolyn got a chocolate zucchini bread recipe. And so that is the way to treat zucchini. If you're wondering how to take care of zucchini, make it in chocolate zucchini bread, and you can't go wrong. I was preparing for the lesson today on work, and I got to thinking about what it is about work that causes people to view it differently. You'll notice some people, just whenever there's work around, they just seem to jump into it. They can't wait to get to it, and they're reluctant to leave it. Other people, when it comes to work, it's hard to find them when it's time to work. As a matter of fact, we've all probably worked with different people through the years who we have thought if they would just put half the effort into the work they're supposed to be doing that they're putting into getting out of the work, they would be just an outstanding employee. So we just view work differently. And as I was thinking about that, I was thinking, and if you'll forgive me, I want to use an example from a movie, but it is an autobiographical movie. It's supposed to be true, although I'm not sure all the dialogue within it is 100% what happened. But it was called The Rookie, and it was about a science teacher down near Midland, Texas, at Big Lake. And he had been a prospect, a baseball prospect, when he was 18 years old and had signed a contract, but he threw his arm out and was injured. And so he did what you and I would do if that had happened. He got another line of employment. And he, in fact, became a science teacher and taught science at Big Lake, Texas. And he also coached baseball while he was there. And while he was coaching baseball, as the events would turn out, he was convinced to have another tryout when he was in his 30s. And the Tampa Bay Devil Rays saw him and they thought, we have got to give him a try. And so they put him into their minor league system. And so the movie is kind of along those lines. You might think it's a boring movie, the ladies that don't like baseball, the men that don't like baseball. I have noticed that date movies, you have to find the perfect balance between athletics and romance. And this is the perfect balance because it's about baseball, but it's also about love because the man loves baseball. And so it's really the perfect date movie. And as you go through it, and he starts kind of relating, or they showed what he went through when he was in the minor leagues. It's very tedious. It was that you didn't make a lot of money in the minor leagues, and you went from town to town in a bus. And he was 34 years old. I think he had three children and a wife at home. And so after a while, he was about ready to give up. There was one guy on the team that he really liked. His name was Brooks, and he and Brooks were visiting afterward. Brooks was a young guy, and they were visiting, and the rookie's name is Jim Morris. And Jim Morris just asked Brooks about his dad, if he was still around, if he ever came to any of the games. He said, yeah, he'll travel thousands of miles every year to watch my games. And so he asked him, did your dad play baseball? And Brooks said, no, it wasn't good enough, but he said he loved it. He said, as a matter of fact, when I was growing up, he was so excited the night before one of my baseball games, he would say, Brooks, you know what we get to do tomorrow? He said, you get to play baseball. And I thought about that with the work we do for the Lord. The difference between a servant, I believe, that is pleasing in God's sight when they work, and one that is not pleasing, is that one gets to work for God, gets to serve God. It's a great privilege. The other has to. And when you have to do something, not because you have a passion for it, but you just feel like you got it to go through, then it can become very tedious. And after a while, you can actually begin to despise that work which you do. I suspect we've all had different jobs in our life where we just did it because there was nothing else available at the time, or it was a job that we just had to do. Somebody had to do it, and we were elected, and so we just got through that. And so we can understand when we have work that is a bit tedious and that we even get to despise after a while. But should we ever get to that point within our service to God? Oh, got to get up and go to church today. Instead of, we get to worship today. Or, I got to read my Bible. Instead of, I get to go and find out what God wants me to know. Really should pray. Instead of, I get to go into the presence of the Creator of the universe and entreat Him for His assistance, which He's promised me He'll give me if I go to Him in the right way. How is it that you view your service to God? Is it have to or get to? Because that's very likely going to determine whether or not you are with Him in heaven for all eternity. Because quite frankly, just think about it from your perspective, those of you who have ever hired anybody or who have been in a position of authority, who do you want to hire? You want to hire the one that wants to be there, or you want to hire the one that just is there for what he can get out of it or she can get out of it? Don't you want the one that is eager to work? Don't you know that it must pain God when we wake up on the first day of the week and we debate whether or not He is worthy of our worship, or we debate whether or not Christ is worthy of our consideration as we gather around the table to remember the sacrifice? I can remember when I was a little boy and they would make something that I considered particularly nasty for supper. And you know, what a terrible thing. Your mom has worked to make that. And here, you know, I'm not going to eat it. And so your dad takes it and he force feeds you something which I understand psychologists really frown on today. I don't think much of psychologists, but in this area, I'm just 100% with them. And I can imagine how heartwarming that must have been for mom to see the things that she had lovingly prepared for her family have to be force-fed into a child that was kicking and screaming. I wonder how God views us when we go before Him instead of viewing it as privileged service, but it's kind of kicking and screaming, and we let everybody know how disappointed we are that we have to sink to this point to do these things. Are you serving God because it's a privilege or because it is required? I think it'll make the difference in eternity. In Psalms 122, verse 1, this is called a song of ascents of David. We know King David was a man after God's own heart. That's why David was made king by God. He was selected from watching the sheep and raised up to become the king of God's chosen people. And this is what David said in the first verse. He said, I rejoiced with those who said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord. Do you rejoice when you get to go to the house of the Lord? Now, we realize this is just a physical building, but certainly when we gather together, the house of the Lord is present. The church is gathering together. We are the house of the Lord. Again, do you rejoice, or is this something that you have to be convinced to do? One of the things that I have found in life for sure is you're going to have to work at something in life. Do you want to work at something that you really don't care for, or do you want to throw all of your effort into something that you really, really want to do? For God so loved the world, ought to cause us to love Him enough to where we feel the privilege to serve Him. In John chapter 12 and verse 35, there's something else about this service, and I believe it's something we should be very attentive to. You ever watch those commercials where they say, you must act now for a limited time only? As if you call, 5 minutes later, they're not going to sell this product that they got stacked on the shelf. But every once in a while, you will have something that's limited. I know when we had this estate sale over here of Kenneth Wood's old stuff, everything that we had was just one of a kind. And so if you didn't buy that one that you wanted, it was gone. And we had to decide on a lot of it. Do we really want to sell this? Because we can't replace this. So sometimes there is an opportunity that really is for a limited time only. And Jesus points that out when it comes to service to Him. John chapter 12 and verse 35. This is in Jesus' final days. And He's talking to His disciples. And He said, you are going to have the light, talking about Himself, just a little while longer. Walk while you have that light, before darkness overtakes you. The man who walks in the dark does not know where he's going. Put your trust in the light while you have it, so that you may become sons of light. When He had finished speaking, Jesus left, and He hid Himself from them. They had the opportunity to be with Him physically just for a little time. And then He was crucified and He was gone. We have the opportunity during our physical lives to walk in the light, if we should choose, to walk in God's way, in Christ's way, if we should choose. But it's a limited time offer, and we don't know when that offer expires. It could be gone in 5 seconds. You could be on the way home this afternoon, and you could be in a terrible accident. You could have a heart attack. There's a million different things that could happen to you. And if you are not walking in the light, then I suspect these things are very serious to you. Now, I don't want to die anytime soon. Don't get me wrong. But I do want you to understand this. When we are walking in the light, even though we don't deserve it, when we are walking in the light, we are saved. And if we are saved and something happens to us, well, we were planning on going to heaven anyway. I know Wes and Vicki just got to go to Kentucky this week. They're going to see the Ark. Did you know that's where the Ark was in Kentucky? But sure enough, they built a reproduction of the Ark. And I know they're excited about it, and I know the girls were excited about it. And I know if they had the opportunity to leave early, they wouldn't have thought, oh, great, we have to leave early. But why is it when it comes to the end of this physical life, when we get to meet that which God created us for, eternity, that we are so often reluctant about that? Now, we don't need to end it a second too soon. I think we really need to be reasonably cautious on our health. I don't think we need to worship our bodies, but I think we need to be reasonably cautious on our health and not do things that are extremely dangerous or extremely foolhardy or extremely unhealthy to where we might take ourselves out of God's service early. I don't think that we have that right, because I think it is God who says, this is how much time I'll give you, and I don't think we need to be taking ourselves out of that service 1 second too early. Neither do I think we need to linger 1 second too long. I think we need to be very content to work for God as long as we live. And if you enjoy that service now and you do it in His way, He wants you to be with Him forever. But let me say again, if you don't enjoy this service now, if it is reluctant, if it is tedious, if it is something that you despise, what makes you think that He is going to accept you into heaven when you have spent your whole life acting as if His light is something repulsive? We have to act now. And I think that's why Jesus said, you're going to have the light just a little while longer. In Haggai chapter 1, we looked at this not too long ago, and so I'm not going to spend a lot of time in Haggai, but Haggai is a prophecy about the time when they were building the temple. And they had come to the point where they were taking care of their own physical things, their own houses, and certainly you need to do that. We need a roof over our head. We need food to eat. And so there are acceptable things. God knows we're in a physical world. And so God, I believe, understands when we are working towards physical things. But when we are starting to work towards physical things to the exclusion of our service to Him, that's when the trouble starts, and that's what Haggai was sent to talk to the people about. In the second year of King Darius, on the first day of the sixth month, the word of the Lord came through the prophet Haggai to Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and to Joshua, son of Jehozadak, the high priest. This is what the Lord Almighty says. These people say, the time has not yet come for the Lord's house to be built. You ever do that? I'm going to get serious about God here. I'm going to get serious about God here. I'm going to get serious about God here. But the time's not yet right. I got some things I need to take care of. And if God didn't want me taking care of these things, well, He should have worked it out to where I didn't have these problems. Whatever their thought was, I'm sure it was the same types of thoughts that are common to us today. And so they are saying the time has not yet come for the Lord's house to be built. In verse 3, the word of the Lord came to the prophet Haggai. Is it a time for you yourselves to be living in your paneled houses while this house, remains a ruin? God is reminding them that when it comes to His service on His things, that it's a limited time offer. And there are times when we need to get to the work. We mustn't be reluctant to do that work. It's a privilege. It's an honor. But when we forget that, and when we start thinking that this life that God has given us on this earth that God has created with all the physical things that are right for us to enjoy, that God has given to us, are the reason that we're here instead of our service to Him, then we need a wake-up call. And we need to be reminded that the time is now for serving God. And I'm absolutely convinced for those who have this attitude of, you know what we get to do today? We get to serve God. That's when life is really joyful. And for those who are reluctant, there's not a lot of joy in it. It's just tedious. In Haggai chapter 2, on the 21st day of the seventh month. And so now he's about a month and 3 weeks later from the first time he appeared to them. The word of the Lord came to the prophet Haggai. Speak to Zerubbabel, son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, to Joshua, son of Jehozadak, the high priest, and to the remnant of the people. Now, he's not just talking to the governor and the high priest. He's talking to everybody. And he says, say to them, or to ask them this question, who of you is left who saw this house in its former glory? How does it look to you now? Does it not seem to you like nothing? But now be strong, O Zerubbabel, declares the Lord. Be strong, O Joshua, son of Jehozadak, the high priest. Be strong, all you people of the land, declares the Lord, and work. For I am with you. I think this is the exact thing that God is saying to us today. Be strong and work. Because that's what you're here for. We're called servants, not because we are here to be pampered and taken care of. We're here to serve. What do we act like we're here for? I really feel like sometimes that when I go back and I review my day, essentially what I look back upon is somebody who thought that he was the master and that God was the servant. Someone who thought that he was the boss and that God was the worker. Do you ever get to where you look over your day and you realize that you've expected God to do things for you, but you've been unwilling to do things for God? Or when you have done things for God, maybe you kind of threw a fit. Okay, I'll do it. I can remember growing up. For those of you who are young and you have a hard time going to Bible class and worship sometime, that's a common thought. But it cannot be pleasing to God when we throw a fit. For those of us who are older and we go to worship and when we go to Bible class, and sometimes we think, I've got a lot to do. Can I really afford this time? That's a common thought. But the fact of the matter is we are here to serve God. Whether we're talking about something as simple and as untime-consuming as a few hours on the first day of the week or an hour or two in the middle of the week, or whether we're talking about something as all-consuming as when you wake up in the morning, you're God's servant, whether you realize it or not, and you're in His employ all day long, whether you realize it or not. But how will we use our hours before Him? Will it be a reluctant service? Will it be a service that we despise? Will it be a service that we let Him know, well, I'll do it, but I'm not very happy about it? Or will it be a service of privileged understanding where we go before God and we acknowledge, I'm sorry that I put so many things in your way, but I want to do things right. And then we ask Him humbly for His help. Do you get to serve God or do you have to serve God? What is it that you get to do today? Can I close with this passage? It's found in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 24. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart. I love to watch people who play with all their heart when they're playing a sport. I love to watch our teens when they're mowing, to mow with all their heart. There are times we get out and you can hardly keep track of them. They're jumping out of the cars so quickly and it's just kind of a blur and there's dust everywhere and then they're back on and we're to the next. I love to watch that. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men. This is one of the keys to life. When I was a real estate appraiser, there would be times where I realized I had something extra to do and I wasn't really happy about it. And I would be tempted to say, well, good enough is good enough. And quite frankly, none of the other appraisers would do this anyway. But it would always come back to me, this is something I haven't taken care of and I'm supposed to be working as if I'm working for the Lord and not for men. And so sometimes it would be, oh, I'll do it. But you know what? Because of that mindset, poor as it was, but because of the attempt to do it right, it was amazing how many dividends that paid for me. Because people appreciate it when you work for them as if they were working for God. And when it comes down to it, that's exactly what you're doing. Your time for your employer is God's time first. Your time for your family is God's time first. Your time for yourself is God's time first. You can take care of all the things you want. You have 24 hours in your day just like the guy next to you or the lady next to you. Are you using that time to work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord? Or are you a little bit disappointed that you have to do something for God? Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know you'll receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ you're serving. Would that attitude make a difference in your life? Invitation's open. It may be that you're ready to become a Christian today. Maybe you need the prayers of the congregation. But if we can help you in any way, won't you come forward and let us know while we stand and sing?